money.
You owe me money.
Give me my money.
Yes, you do. Yes,
you
do.
You owe me money.
You owe me.
Give me my money.
Hi, I'm Dara M. Wilson.
And I'm Yasmin Khan.
And this is Money Haha,
the podcast where smart, funny friends bring money talk out of the shame drawer and onto the table.
Each week, we discuss one of those money topics that pretty much everyone struggles with, but nobody feels comfortable talking about.
And we are so excited to introduce today's guest. She is an expert on financial health and co-author of The Financial Diaries, which is a deep dive into the financial lives of 235 working American families. She's currently exploring how to strategically deliver cash infusions to people at the right time in the right way in order to make a little money go a longer way. It is Rachel Schneider. Welcome to the show.
Oh, it's so nice to be here. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, of course. We're so excited to have you.
How's your day going?
It's great. I'm sitting here shivering. I'm in the coldest conference room in the history of conference rooms. But other than that, it's a great day.
That is the legacy of men in the workplace, making it colder for women. Because It's like the calculations are all based off of what men wore in the workplace in the 50s
ties
or something.
And suits and all these warm things.
Cummerbunds.
I know, it's true.
You know, men with their cummerbunds, they're always wearing them all over the place.
Exactly. They're multiple layers. And also, I'm in New York City, and it's like in September, nobody knows what temperature it is. So do we turn on the air conditioning? Do we turn on the heat? What's happening? What do we do?
Yeah, meanwhile, we're still sweltering, and there's no end in sight.
Here at Oakland.
Yes.
Yeah. You're at the wing, though, so I would think it's a women's space that they would, you know how to, like, adjust the temperature.
Zhuzh it.
I know. You would think, right? Because I was, as you were saying that, I was thinking, yes, it is the case that often conference rooms are cold because, you know, exactly what you said. But I'm sitting in a women's-centric space, and it's just still that buildings are cold. What they have at the wing are blankets everywhere, though, in case you're cold.
So they do know.
I could go get a blanket, but I'm going to not bother with that.
You don't want to get too cozy on a podcast recording.
No.
It is easy to feel like you're at a sleepover and just drift off if you don't stay alert.
No, at a sleepover and you stay up all night gabbing with your friends.
That's true. That's the vibe we really try to bring to the podcast of, like, we're going to braid each other's hair and, you know, play a few pranks and, you know.
Play a few pranks.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, like where you put the hand in the water.
And make somebody go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Rachel.
Which is actually just mean.
Right. That's
Did you play any pranks? Did you do sleepovers as a kid?
Oh, yeah. But I did not play any pranks. So we did that thing where you try and levitate somebody. Did you guys do that thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Light as a feather, stiff as a board.
Yes. Yes.
I was levitated at a summer camp. A magician came in and I volunteered and I was levitated, and it was really creepy because I couldn't figure out how it was done. But I didn't do a lot of sleepovers. I don't know, me and a lot of my Black friends, that was just not a thing, letting your kids go to some stranger's house.
Yeah. I was not allowed to do sleepovers either. I think
it was like a family. I could go to like a cousin's.
I go to a cousin's house.
And even then, only certain cousins.
I was allowed to have sleepovers, though.
Mm,
so it was always at our house.
Same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, light as a feather. But didn't you ever feel like maybe you were kind of levitating? Like if you concentrated real hard and just let yourself feel it? Maybe it was just me.
Well, at some point I want to hear more about actually being levitated. That's crazy to me. Like, did you figure out how the magician did it?
At the time, thought that there must have been I don't know what the construction item is called. It goes shoop.
Like a platform or something?
Kind of. It has like two spikes and it goes into the wood platform.
Oh.
Like a forklift.
Oh.
Yeah. Two spears, like a fork.
Right.
And then it lifts. So I thought that that's what it was. But then I surreptitiously tried to look behind and it wasn't there. So I truly, like, maybe I just actually got levitated.
Maybe that's why you weren't allowed to go to sleepovers, because it was more about just, like, black magic and trying to keep you safe.
It's like the schools that are banning the reading of Harry Potter because they're like, there's real spells in there.
Yeah.
My parents were like, no, Leviosa. Wow. I surprised myself with that reference. I don't even know that lived
that's
inside
super funny.
Me.
Well, it is time, I think, to open up our mailbag. It's something we do each week just to kick off the episode. So let's read what our lovely listeners have had to say today. Jess Barnes wrote in to say, listening to Money Haha while I work today. Love listening to funny women give me life lessons that I definitely need to hear.
I'm so glad that at Jess Types said that, because we are also giving each other life lessons that we need to hear.
Yeah.
We need to take our
own
advice. Sometimes
I listen to our episodes and I'm like, I need to do that more.
And sometimes I listen to our episodes and I'm like, wow, I am a cautionary tale.
That's mostly what we're here to serve as, cautionary tales. Walking, talking, giggling, cautionary tales.
We also got some feedback from our episode with Berna at Hey Berna, who was so much fun to have on. At Hippie Amber said, so hyped by this episode. Being Black and Filipino, I can relate to a lot of the things said on this. And then fire emoji, fire emoji, fire emoji. That's right. That's right. Three of them.
They also said, Mr. Akande Aduke said, beautiful woman doing a beautiful thing with two high fives in a row, which I'll take it. I love it. I'm happy about it. Why not?
Shy Girl 04 says, thanks for another great, funny, and relatable episode. Got some horrible money advice growing up from different people. Glad I'm not the only one and that I was able to make some smarter decisions. Hope to pay it forward to my friends and family and others in the community. That's right. Pay it forward.
Yes.
This is all we are trying to do, is like dispel these myths, get rid of all your bad money advice, all your money shame, all your money juju that is making things more difficult for you. Tell all your friends right now, immediately, about this podcast.
Let the sun shine in. Talk about it. Because, yeah, that's how these things get easier.
That's right.
And Libby Britton said, oh my God, you guys had Hey Berna in the office. I freaking love her. Well, so does everyone. And so do we. So it's a great episode. You guys should check it out.
If you are following us on social media, there has been passed around now a video of Berna, Yasmin, and myself dancing. To Taylor Swift music, which was chosen specifically for a member of the Money Haha team who is a Taylor Swift fan, and I'm not going to out that person. But we do look very silly, and it is a very fun video. So
it is a fun. Actually, watching that video made me realize, like, I've definitely hit a point in my life where, like, I'm just like, this is what I look like. That is how I jiggle, and we're just gonna embrace it.
There was a moment where I was talking about squatting and actually doing squatting and was like, I'm okay with that. It's not great, but it is truthful to where I am. So at Savory Noonday Drama, wow, that's a lot of name. I love that. Says, talking about relieving stress, which includes me spending time just feeling the wind and listening to podcasts, and I am admittedly obsessed. I'm not a big television person, but I do not have time for it anyway. Brag. my favorite podcasts are Mom Struggling Well, Money Haha Pod, because they're women who have good info and it all feels very relatable. Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
This is a nice mailbag segment. This is so great.
It's getting us all warmed up and like feeling good, which is what we usually like to do. Warm you up, make you feel nice and relaxed, and then we come at you with the stressful stuff.
Yeah, that's one way to put it. We are talking today in this episode about lending options or borrowing for a cash crunch. What do you do when you need some money and you need to borrow from somewhere? There's lots of situations where people are in a crunch for cash, need to borrow. Rachel, who we're so excited to have again, is an expert on the problems that lead to needing to borrow and which solutions are better than others. And we're going to talk about both of those things today.
And before we get started, we are just going to take a little moment to step into the no judgment zone.
Zone.
Yes. So this is a segment where we share our own experiences with our week's topic without judging each other or ourselves, which is really, really important too.
And I have said this before and I will reiterate, I advise everyone listening to also not judge us.
Dara, what's your no judgment story for this week?
So if we're talking about borrowing and cash crunches, I think the story that's top of mind for me, I feel like all of our topics lately, honestly, have been very squicky and sweaty, and I get super nervous every time we start talking. But let me just dive on in. A few years ago, I had made a decision that one of my credit cards was actually going to be a charge card. I say I made a decision. They sent me the card in the mail, and I was like, ooh, this is fancy. And so I signed up for the card because they pre-approved me. And so I've had it forever, but it is a charge card and not a credit card, which means at the end of the pay period, I need to give them money. There is like very little grace period. There is no like just roll over with interest. They're like, nah, give me my money right now. And I found myself in a position where I was not able to do that. And I was kind of looking around at all of the different options that I had. I actually felt like I didn't have a whole lot of options, or at least I didn't know where to turn. And then my bank, again, this is letting other people make decisions for you. My bank was like, hey, do you want to do like a credit consolidation, a balance transfer? And I was like, okay, yeah, I'll do that. Because they have like these great introductory rates. And they're like, and as long as you pay it off within this time period, you don't pay any interest at all. And I was like, well, I'll definitely do that. But like, why would I think I was going to do that when I'm also the person who got myself into this situation in the first place? Like, those are not the same people. So it took longer than I had anticipated, but as long as I should have anticipated to pay off the whole balance transfer. But I also was very grateful because it ended up not really having that negative impact on my credit, because the bank also gave me they increased my credit limit at the same time, just randomly. So my credit score still ended up being good. I didn't have the negative impact of not being able to pay off the thing. But I also was very embarrassed about being in this situation to begin with, because it was just like, you spend too many monies. That's all it was.
No judgment.
Let me wipe off my upper lip.
It is happening.
Yasmeen, what about you? What is your cash crunch, no judgment story for this week?
So in past episodes, I've talked about at grad school, the last semester of grad school, not getting the financial aid that I needed and finding myself with a lot of credit card debt. Another big consequence of that was, you know, I moved to Providence, Rhode Island, which is, if you're a California girl, just like basically another planet. Four seasons are nice and all, but, you know, digging your car.
Overrated.
Very
overrated.
Digging your car out of the snow is just not the life I imagined for myself. And I was so excited to just come back to California. But because I ended with all of this credit card debt that I hadn't anticipated having and not a lot of like great job prospects. So I had my master's degree. I was so excited, but it turned out, you know, it was right in the middle of the recession, 2010. There were not a lot of options for just getting a job that even just like fulfill the basics of putting a roof over my head and putting food on the table and putting gas in the car. And so my mind was just so occupied with those basic things. I literally could not scrape together the few hundred dollars it would take to fly myself home. I tried many things, including at one point, I took all of my personal belongings and sold them at a yard sale, which is really sad because when I look back, like there's just, you know, little things you collect over your life that are meaningful to you, that remind you of different periods of your life. Like I literally had to just like, release and get rid of all that stuff just so that I could, in my mind, you know, make the move cheaper and easier.
Right.
But even with that, I think one thing we talk about a lot is just the cognitive load of being so strapped for cash. And so I was working a bunch of waitressing jobs. I was also a cheesemonger, like selling cheese at the farmer's market every Saturday morning, you know, and talking to like very fancy people about the wet rind this and the, you know, all the goodness.
I'm never going to not laugh when you say monger.
Yeah.
Any kind of monger.
It's the thing. It is the name of the job. I would spend every Friday cutting cheese. You may also laugh at that.
And thank you for the permission.
Yeah. But my day to day was just so, you know, filled with what am I going to do to get by to the next day. I ended up being stranded in Providence for over a year. Unable, I had bad credit, so I couldn't put a plane ticket on a credit card. It was incredibly lonely, incredibly isolating. I mean, I'm lucky I had a great group of people that I lived with. I'd lived in this big house full of just like really wonderful people, and we all sort of like pulled together and supported each other. But, and that was really helpful, but I didn't have any way of like literally just getting myself home. And there were no financial institutions that were willing to help me out, because at that point, my credit was just completely maxed out, because that last semester of school, I didn't get that loan and I had maxed everything out. And I could barely pay those bills. So eventually what ended up happening was a good friend of mine gave me the money to come home. And that was a really hard thing. It was for me to accept emotionally, because I like to be more of a giver, and it was receiving is really, really hard. But, you know, it was a person that I love and trust, and she's a really important person in my life to this day. And it's sort of her thing to me was just like, it's the weight that it has for you is not the weight that it has for me. And so that was, you know.
That's very kind.
It was. You know, I think having those relationships is important, and not, and being thoughtful and mindful about just, you know, what you're willing to receive and ask for. I probably should have asked a year earlier, because I was really depressed being so far from home. But that was, you know, when credit is not available to you, that's the option that you have sometimes, yeah, if you're lucky.
What about you, Rachel? Do you have a no judgment story to share about being in a cash crunch?
I do, although I feel like it's the opposite kind of no judgment. Like, my life has really genuinely been one of ease. And so when I hear these stories, I also always just, I feel grateful and really lucky. So when I was in college, and I to give more context to that, right? So I, after grad school, like easily found a job that paid lots of money. And so most of my adult life, and I worked in the private sector for a bunch of years, and then I went into the nonprofit world, but I still was far enough along in my career that my financial life was pretty steady. And so most of my adult life, I haven't really experienced much financial challenge. When I was in college, my parents paid for a school, which was awesome and really lucky. And I thought I should pay for my own living expenses, or for my, you know, I should at least contribute in some way. So I waited tables. And there were some times then when I would get short, right? When I just didn't like, and a lot of that, to be honest, was poor. Well, it was exactly what I ended up studying later, right? That like when you're waiting tables and you don't know exactly how much money you're going to have, then calibrating that to exactly how much money you're spending can be hard. Mm-hmm. And so I just got it wrong sometimes. Right. And there wasn't anything big that happened. It was just I spent more money than I had. But I was super lucky because I could go to my parents and they would bail me out. The one time that I remember really strongly when that happened, when I had, you know, just like I had racked up credit card debt, which to me at the time seemed like so much. In hindsight, I think it was $350 or $400, but it was really a big amount for me at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was so ashamed to go to my parents and ask for them to pay that bill. So ashamed. And it really took a lot to ask them. And I put it off and I put it off and I like let the balance build up unnecessarily, you know, because of exactly what you were saying. Like it didn't feel good to ask. Even though obviously, like for where I was at that point in my life, that was pretty clearly the answer.
Right.
You know, but it's tough because we have all these emotions built up around like what we are doing for ourselves versus what we want other people to help us with. And it can be hard. Like we want to think that money is just about the dollars and cents, but it's not. It's usually about the emotions.
Yeah.
I mean, I may be saying that too strongly. Like it is often about the dollar and cents. Like if you don't have enough for the cost of living, then that's a real math problem. But a lot of people's decisions about money are about the feelings.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about that a lot on the show. I mean, it's similar to how people talk about food. It's not just about calories in, calories out. It's about how you're feeling and how your emotions affect the way that you have that relationship with that thing. And with money, it's the same. And we all have different barometers. So I remember, yeah, $300 for one person can feel like an overwhelming amount. I remember at one point having an amount that I think was like $1,500, and I just felt like that was going to crush me. And I had friends who were just like, "Oh, it's no biggie. You'll, you know," and just being like, "What?" Like, I can barely, you know, get my bank account to stay above, you know, $300 in a paycheck cycle. I don't know why this is so dismissible for others, but we all have a different barometer.
We have different baselines. And I do appreciate you being explicit about how lucky you have been, because I think when we have these conversations, it's important to be like transparent and genuine when we're talking about these things so that people don't feel like, well, if it worked out for this person, it should have worked out for me, because people are coming from different sets of circumstances. I have talked on the show about borrowing from my parents. It happened one time when I was moving to California, and it was very difficult. And then it has not happened since. And I just, as both of you were speaking, I was just realizing when I was talking about my situation, it never crossed my mind that that was a possibility to go to them. Mm-hmm. Like, I am the daughter to be like successful and not to be a burden and to talk to people about things that are going on. But like after I have wrapped it up and be like, ooh, you would have been laughing because one of my eyeballs was on the ground. but after I've popped the eyeball back in and like turned it into a story as opposed to here's what's happening right now. So I think, you know, sharing what those baselines are from different people are very important.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. And I think that one of the hard things when we think about money and money advice is that the natural instinct is to project from your own life and say, well, I did it this way, so you should do it that way. Mm-hmm. But that's, we're all coming from different places, so that doesn't necessarily work. And a lot of my professional life has been about, like, how do I deepen my understanding of other people's experience? Because mine isn't really going to be the experience that helps us come up with the right answers for a lot of people.
Right.
Yeah, and a lot of that is about uplifting the voices of people who have different experiences, which I think is something you've done a tremendous job at in your career.
Oh, that's nice.
And in your book. So
I tried. I tried.
Well, on that note, let's dig in a little deeper, learn a little bit more about this week's topic. Since when we have experts on, we like to take our facts section and actually ask the experts questions. So our first question for you, Rachel, is can you describe for us what the situations are where people need short-term access to extra cash?
So many. So I know you guys usually give some numbers, and you've probably given the number that about 40% of Americans can't easily come up with $400 if they need it, which is a number the Federal Reserve has been putting out every year. They do this annual survey and they ask this question. And I think it was initially super shocking for people that 40% of Americans don't have $400 set aside that they could easily handle an unexpected expense. But when you dig into, well, why is that? I tend to think about it as a systemic problem, right? So wages just have not grown at the same rate as the cost of living. And that's been the case for several decades now. So real wages adjusted for inflation are not growing fast enough to keep up with the rises in the cost of housing, the cost of education, the cost of transportation. And so that leaves people with really a very thin or non-existent margin with which to put aside some money. So then when that's your situation, then you layer onto that, okay, I'm living at break even or just barely breaking even already. Layer onto that that people have a lot of volatility. They have a lot of ups and downs in their earnings and ups and downs in their spending need. And so how do you manage against that, right? If your rent's due tomorrow, but you don't get paid till next week and you live with zero cushion, then just the fact that your bills are due could mean that you don't have the small amount of money or the big amount of money that you need in this moment.
Right.
I talked to somebody a few years ago when I was first doing the diaries research that stuck with me so much on this point. This person was talking to me about how they wouldn't fill up their gas tank because it wouldn't make sense for them to have the full dollar amount of, you know, what it costs to fill up their gas tank sitting in their car, basically in the form of gas. Because what if something came up tomorrow and I need that cash, mm-hmm. right? And so this person was going to fill their tank every $5 or $10 worth of gas in order to preserve some liquidity. That's how, you know, that's how a lot of people's experience.
Yeah. Because you can't have that gas for dinner once all that money is in the tank. You can't. I've interviewed people who have said, you know, I don't pay certain bills because they don't put a roof over my head or food in my children's bellies. So you have to like really prioritize those things that are super immediate sometimes.
Yep, exactly.
So what are some of the common traps people fall into with short-term borrowing?
It's a tough one because, you know, so the biggest trap is to borrow money that you are not going to be able to repay, right? So there are what people in the advocacy community rightly get super worked up about is the existence of payday loans. And so going to borrow, for those of you who don't know, like a payday loan is a loan where you essentially sign over your next paycheck, right, and say, I'll repay this money with my next paycheck. And if you're actually able to repay that loan, fine. The interest rates are super expensive. What happens is most people are not able to repay that loan. And so the biggest trap is probably the thinking, I'm going to be able to repay this, and taking out this loan that you can't repay and that now is going to roll over and roll over and roll over and have higher fees and make it harder and harder to get out from under it. And then there's looser versions of that. Like you could have that same experience with credit card debt where it just grows and spirals out of your control. And you could have the same experience with overdraft on your checking account. So there's lots of ways to end up over indebted. And I think they probably mostly stem from a real need. And sometimes they're genuinely not being a better choice. And therefore taking out the loan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes me think of, because what you're describing, there's like a certain amount of optimism that's going into this, which is like, I will be able to do this in the future. I can't do it today. And I think optimism is such an important part of resiliency, and resiliency is really what helps us to make it through hard times. So keeping in mind that we want to have that optimism and that resiliency, what kind of considerations should you take into account before making a decision on which lending option to choose?
Well, I take a deep breath in trying to answer that, because I really do think that when people, like, exactly, I totally agree with everything you just said. Like, we need optimism in order to be resilient. And when you're having a moment when you don't genuinely don't have the money you need for whatever it is, whether it's your move back home or just paying your rent or buying gas for your car, like, that need needs to be solved, right? And so that it's not that we don't want people to be optimistic. And that thought of, if I borrow, I'll be able to repay, is, as you're saying, like a really good, healthy instinct. I guess what you do really want people to do, or what hopefully people will do, is be more realistic with themselves, right? Balance that optimism with awareness of what money they actually have coming in, and try and genuinely exhaust all other options before taking on debt that they can't repay. But, you know, I think that it's hard for me to give that advice, because I think that the real answer is that people are dealing with things that are pretty much out of their control, like, and doing the best they can. And so, yes, it's very easy to give that advice of, hey, just don't take on that debt if you don't think you can repay it. But in the moment, if you need to put gas in your car, you need to put gas in your car.
Yeah.
So in a way, I want to say, like, you know, don't beat yourself up about it if you end up over indebted. Just take a deep breath and figure out the next step to get out of that situation.
Yeah. No, it's
true.
Yeah.
It's just,
I don't know if that laugh is like, no, oh, that's a great thing to say. Or yeah,
empathy,
yeah.
Because it's just hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard, right?
It's hard. And sometimes that's all we can do, is just acknowledge that it's freaking hard.
Yeah. In the Financial Diaries, you talk about hidden inequality, that people are usually explaining inequality as people failing in their personal responsibilities. But what have you learned about in your research about why people find themselves needing to borrow money? Like, why certain groups find themselves in those positions more than other groups?
Well, a lot of it actually goes back to the personal stories we all shared, right? So some groups have more cushion as a group, right? I could go to my parents instead of borrowing. And that changes my financial trajectory in all ways from the beginning. So it is the case that the wealth gap in our country, you know, people are focused rightly on the income gap. Mm-hmm. There's big wage disparities in our country. But there's, I think, an even scarier wealth gap, where communities of color just own far less wealth than white communities in our society. And that plays out in really big ways across the community. Or across individual lives. So one of the things we did in the book is we looked at how, and in the research that preceded the book, we looked at the extent to which people borrow and lend to each other, to their friends and family, right? So lots of people, like the first thing you're going to do before you go take out a high-cost loan is you're going to borrow money from a friend. Mm-hmm. And in our research study, 95% of the people that we worked with over the course of the study either borrowed or saved or lent money with somebody in their community over the course of the year. And I should say what the research was a deep dive into the financial lives of working families who were all middle to lower income across the country for a full year. Mm-hmm. So we had a year's worth of information, and what we saw was that people borrow and save with each other and help each other out, right? Makes obvious intuitive sense. Mm-hmm. So what we also saw, though, was that the dollar amount that people could borrow or lend to or from each other varied by community, right? Because some communities have more money in their community to borrow and lend to each other.
Right.
So we do have these really big systemic structural challenges with money in our society. And they then play out in individual people's lives in ways that, like, I think people take individual responsibility for, and they think it's their own fault, their own responsibility to fix. And they have lots of, and that's not 100% wrong in that you do have to engage and try and fix your own financial life. But a lot of the root causes are these bigger challenges of inequality that we have, you know, we could go on and on across our society.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And I think just to sort of piggyback on that, I was really sort of drawn to the idea of the title of your first chapter is like that these are hidden inequalities, and you describe, you know, that for some of the families that you're interviewing, you know, from the outside, it appears that everything's sort of middle class and stable, but within there, you know, on the inside of the home, there's a lot more instability. Can you just talk a little bit more about that and what you mean by these inequalities being hidden?
Yeah, for sure. So we tend to think about inequality as really about wages or about wealth accumulation. But when we were talking about a hidden inequality, we were talking about a different idea around finances, which was really the ability to be stable in your financial life, the ability to feel secure in your financial life. And what you see when you look at numbers in the American population is that people feel a level of instability pretty high up the income range. So, you know, as many as a third of people who earn $100,000 or more in their household still report being financially ill healthy, if you will, right? So they still say they don't necessarily have an easy time paying all of their bills, or they don't necessarily have enough saved for the future or feel confident that they could cover it if a big disruption happened in their life. And so pretty high up the income range, people still feel a sense of insecurity. And the way that showed up in the lives of the people that we were getting to know was in stories like one woman who really did present as middle class, right? Owned a house with her husband, 3 kids, 2 cars, full-time work. And she still said, you know, I don't know if I should pay my mortgage right now. Like, I have the money on hand, but I'm worried. Is it that same gas question? She was saying, that,
wow, yeah.
Like, I don't know if I should pay this bill right now, because if I pay my mortgage right now, but then next month my husband earns less than he usually does, then I won't be able to pay for something else. And then I'll have to borrow from my sister, and I don't want to borrow from my sister. And so what's going on for a lot of people is that even if they have a sort of middle class, in air quotes, life, they still don't have the feeling of ease and confidence and stability and security that we associate with having made it into the middle class.
I think we are, Yasmin and I both are many times in this episode just having a lot of moments of like digesting and being like, yeah.
I know. I was thinking, true. Oh, I'm like the doomsday. Like, here, this is money. Ha ha. It's not money like, wah, wah. It's not the sad part.
Well, it's the.
I know. I do feel like the hopeful part of, like, I don't know, part of why I'm so big on arguing these systemic ideas and arguing about the like deeper inequality that we have is that I do think it's so important to help individuals take themselves off the hook, like in a way, right? Like, let's acknowledge that we have a bigger problem and not at least not feel personally shamed and personally bad, right? So like this woman that I'm describing who didn't know if she should pay her mortgage, like that was a shameful feeling, right? Mm-hmm. That was a I screwed up feeling.
Absolutely.
And it could just as easily have been a, oh, crap, like something bad is going on in my neighborhood feeling instead of a I've screwed up feeling.
We are shame magnets. We tend to take it on all ourselves.
Yeah, we do. We take it on ourselves. And to be clear, like what was most inspiring about the diaries stories and about like these stories of instability is how creative and resilient and amazing people are in figuring out workarounds so that they still can make their lives work, right? They might have worry and they might not feel a sense of ease, but they're making it work.
Yeah, people are still, they're finding a way to make it work. They're finding ways to find joy despite all of it.
Yeah.
Because it, like step one is uncovering this stuff, which people like you are really helping us to do. And step two is enacting all the change that needs to happen to relieve some of the stress for people. But in the meantime, mm-hmm. while we're figuring that out, like people still need to live. And they are,
yeah,
which is
totally. Yeah, totally. Exactly. Like this woman I'm talking about who didn't pay know if she should pay her mortgage, she was amazing in talking about how she set aside like she was super creative in her saving strategy and super creative in avoiding loans when she didn't have, you know, like her way of strategizing around the volatility that her family was experiencing was to, when there was a sale in her neighborhood, she would just stock up on toothpaste or toilet paper or pork chops or whatever, right? Her freezer was full, her pantry was full. And so she had a feeling like that's how she kind of worked around the volatility and worry. And she made herself feel like they were going to be okay. Like her family was always going to have food on the table and they were always going to have what they needed because she was really resourceful and creative about making their money life work.
And it is, it's also so important to have that feeling of control.
Totally.
In your life. Because part of what could be detrimental when you are realizing like, oh, I am somewhat a cog in a machine and a system is working against me. It does make it feel like, okay, so then what can I do?
Yeah.
Actually, which is a great transition into our next segment, which is our action item, Yasmeen, song.
Action item.
Yes. Each week we give you a simple thing you could do right away to get better at money. And this week, I believe we're going to get our action item from our guest. Rachel, do you have an action item for our listeners?
I do have an action item for our listeners. I do think the thing to do is to put yourself on a savings habit in some way. And this could look different for different people. Like some people find it really effective to set up an automatic transfer from their checking account to their savings account. Other people pick one of the many amazing new-ish fintech apps that help you to save. But even if you're saving like a dollar a week, it does add up. And eventually you find yourself with the cushion that can help you avoid borrowing. It can be hard to do. It can feel a little scary to do. But if you set up something that allows it to be out of sight and out of mind, and then before you know it, you'll have some money set aside.
And building the habit for saving is as important as the saving itself. At least in my personal experience, like getting in the groove of doing that is so important.
Yeah. And I think the invisibility of it too, what Rachel is talking about, makes sense. Like knowing that it's happening automatically and I don't have to think about it. Also just it opens up your mind to like, oh, this is possible.
Right.
I felt like this was not possible, but there are, you know, automatic things that you can do to make it possible so that that becomes a new part of your reality.
And sometimes, because we have talked in the past about how, like, sometimes telling people to save feels like a joke. Like, you're like, I don't have any money to do anything. How can I save?
Yeah.
But there are situations where literally, like I said, it's building the muscle. Even if you're just putting aside, like, if I pay for something in cash and I get change, like, the change is not money for me for right now. It always goes aside.
Yes. And having it. Yeah. And even just that dollar, I think putting it, making those small little things count is important. In the interviews I've done, a lot of people have mentioned like Dave Ramsey's baby steps. And one of his baby steps is like to save $1,000. And for a lot of people, they're just like, if you're calling $1,000 baby steps, then I just feel like an embryo. Like, I am not even, like, close to being a fetus in your world. Like, it's just different levels. And I think making it okay to just have whatever is in your savings be what it is. And,
yeah.
And if you have to dip into it to cover an emergency, then that's fine too. That's not failure. That's what it's there for.
Oh, right. I totally agree.
Yeah. I think it's great advice.
Yeah. I just really love what you both said about it, because it is about the habit and the behavior and not the outcome. Like, it's just not about how much money is in your account. Because if you get too fixated on how much money is in your account, then you'll forget that, oh, the point is when something comes up, I'm supposed to use that. That was the point. And what you sometimes see is people not using their savings and instead borrowing. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is because it was such hard work to accumulate that savings.
Right.
And then you don't want to spend it. And that's fair. That's good. But I don't know. Not if you're then going to pay interest on a loan at the same time. You're better off using your savings and then just start again. That's why it's about the behavior.
Right.
You just keep doing it.
Right. Exactly.
Well, this has been a great conversation. I am going to transition us into the next part of our podcast, which is It Was Worth It.
It was worth it. It was worth it. Hey, hey, it was worth it.
See, we're bringing the energy back. There we go. Guys. It Was Worth It is a segment where each of us share something we spent money on in the past week that we actually feel was worth the money. And I just want to emphasize the reason we do this is because there is so much personal shame around the spending that we do. And a lot of what we try to talk about is that a lot of the problems are bigger than ourselves. And it's okay. It's okay that we spend money sometimes on things that bring us joy. So, Dara, what is your It Was Worth It?
My It Was Worth It for this week is my little dog, Milo, full name Milo Marie Jackson III, nay pants. Thank you very much. He got groomed this week, so he got a little puppy cut, and the groom didn't happen when it was supposed to, so I got a very deep discount. So he got, like, tip to tail, ooh, all of it done for, like, under $30, which is amazing. And he's so freaking cute. It's bananas. And I just, like, every time he walks by, I keep feeling like, come here.
I love you more now.
I would never say that into a microphone.
But I can see it on your face. I'm in the room with you, and I know it.
He looks fantastic. I'll make sure we share some pictures with this episode. He looks so good. My little man.
How about you, Rachel? Do you have an It Was Worth It purchase that you felt good about in the last week or so?
I did. My parents were visiting this weekend, and so I took my kids and my parents, and we did this thing in New York City called The Accomplice, which was like a walk around the village. It's a mystery. It's actors pretending to do things that actors do.
How fun.
It was like a cross between Escape the Room and a walking tour, but it was super fun. And I bought the tickets for us, and it was really nice. I mean, it can be tough to know what to do with grandparents and kids that everybody will like.
Right.
But everybody liked it. It was worth the cash.
Yeah. Those are my favorite expenses, is like experiences, because there's nothing more meaningful than just making memories with your loved ones.
It's true. And my kids said, hey, this is a tourist thing. We live here, but it was still good.
There's an Oakland version of that.
Oh, really?
And I have been getting bombarded with advertisements for it. And I feel myself, I know, getting weighed down.
We should do it. Maybe that'll be our next It Was Worth It.
Ooh, but the last time we planned and it was worth it in advance, it turned out not to be worth it.
It wasn't. We went to a comedy festival that turned out to be bonkers, unorganized.
Bummer.
Yeah.
What about you, Yasmin? What's your It Was Worth It for this week?
My It Was Worth It is, as you know, I've been doing less stand-up comedy lately and doing more writing sketch comedy. It's been really fun. It's really fun to go to a show and not have to get on stage and just sit and watch other people act things out for you. So I enrolled in Sketch Writing 2, which is a little bit of chunk of change, but I'm really excited. I love writing comedy. I love writing scenes. And I realize, like, it's important for me to have something that I do in my downtime that's not just watching TV. So I'm like, maybe I'll write TV or write shows. And heck so yeah. It's been really, really fun, and it was worth the dollar bills. So
nice.
Life enriching.
Well, that's it for us. This has been so fun and informative. Thank you so much, Rachel, for being here with us.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. It was really fun to talk to you both.
Do you have any plugs, any places you're going to be, things people should know about, where you live on social media, maybe?
Sure. I mean, if people want more information about the research study I did or the book, it's called usfinancialdiaries.org. And you can always find me through that website. I am not so much on the social media. I am findable on Twitter as Rachel Schneider, but I don't pay as much attention to that as I used to. So probably email is better.
God bless you.
Yeah. Yeah. What can you do? You can't be everywhere.
Better for your life, probably.
Maybe.
Yeah.
All right, that's our show. You can catch us back here every single Tuesday. Next week on Money Haha, we'll be talking about saving for vacation with Aaron Ryan. If you like the podcast, show the support. Rate us, leave us a great review wherever you're listening to this right now. And make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode.
We would love to hear your lovely voice. Send us your stories, questions, and ideas for future episodes. Record a 30-second voice memo. Kick it off by telling us your first name and where you are, or you can remain anonymous. And then email that recording to hi@moneyhahapod.com. That is hi@moneyhahapod.com.
Follow us, tweet us @moneyhahapod on Twitter and Instagram. Dara is Dara M. Wilson on Twitter. And I'm Yasmin K, YASMINEK on Instagram. Hey, Dara, anything you want to plug?
Yes, my all-lady stand-up show that I produce with Jackie Kali'i'a called Amazonians.
Yes.
We have a new place. We are going to be monthly every second Thursday of the month in Jack London Square in Oakland. If you're interested in that, the show is always packed. It's so much fun. It's at a cider brewery, which is a lot of fun. You can get tickets for the next show, which is October 10th at bit.ly/Amazonians1019. That's bit.ly/Amazonians1019.
Money Haha is a production of the Even app. Learn more at even.com.
It's hosted by me, Dara M. Wilson.
And me, Yasmin Khan.
Our executive producer is Jane Librock.
And our producer is Phil Circus.
Our designer is Allison Chan.
What? Our social media manager is Nicole Maltrati.
Our production manager is Adejoke Adegoke.
And our theme music is Money by Antique Naked Soul.
Ow, ow!
You keep trying to explain.
Until next week.
Have a nice life.
Why you disappeared after you got my dough. Save your breath, there's no excuse. I will never loan you no money, no more. It's not a gift, it was a loan. I've been calling, but you don't pick up the